Hi everybody, welcome to the Poetry Blog. Today we have Tommy with us. Tommy, will you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Tommy Teebs Pico. I'm an Indigenous American poet, screenwriter, podcaster, perennially single, actively mingling. You can find me online at HeyTeebs, H-E-Y-T-E-B-S, on all relevant social media. You can also find me at Tommy-Pico, TOMMY-PICO.com. I would say I update it regularly, but that would be a lie.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. I love the emphasis on T-E-E-B-S.
Oh yeah. Well, because yeah. Everything I say is BS, and everything most people say is BS anyway. I'm kind of
traffic and
belief systems. Yeah, I'm suspicious of the supremacy of any kind of one kind of belief as being that's the thing. I think there's something to be learned from almost everything.
Yeah, especially if you're a poet, right? Because then you're always trafficking in multiple meaning-making worlds you could do.
Yes, I think too that partially because there is a responsibility oftentimes I think of a poet and writers in general and artists and stuff to create tethers between almost disparate things that I find it's wonderful to connect math and religion and fashion and, you know, and it's like there is a tether to everything as long as you pull the cord tight enough, you know? Okay, so I got a commission to write a film a couple of years ago, and one of the things that I asked them to do was specifically to, because I didn't go to school for film, I didn't go to school for anything that I've done. Yeah. I didn't go to school for English, poetry is a vocation of mine now, but that's not what I was educated for. I thought I was going to go to medical school, so I studied math and science and medicine and all that kind of crap. But I told them as a curriculum, the production company, I was like, tell me to watch, they wanted me to watch all of these movies that were, you know, kind of funny and dialogue based because that's kind of what I had shown a strength at. Yeah. And I was like, no, I want you to assign me films to watch that
aren't what you already do.
Yes, I want them to exist with the minimal amount of dialogue. I want it to be more association than anything else. I want it to be image based because that was my deficit. That's not what I was good at.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that I enjoyed those films, but I'd learned so much about what you can do with gesture. You know, what you can do without words, what you can do by just focusing on, like, juxtaposition, focusing on one thing and then another, like a plant and then a background, or, you know, or a person's frowning and then a train car. And it's like up to you to do that tether work, figure out what it is about those things that are dissonant. What about them is similar? What about them speaks to each other? What about them has their back to each other?
Yeah, yeah.
Are they like binary stars? Are they only show each other the same face? Or are they like in far-flung galaxies and the light doesn't even touch each other? So I liked having to make connections in imagistic film with a minimal amount of dialogue.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, like, again, I wouldn't say that I like it, but I never fail to learn.
Perfect. We haven't even gotten to what I wanted to start with yet, but that made me think of another thing. So would you say, and this is a somewhat selfish question, that a lot of what you learned when asking to take in techniques you didn't normally use was about the power of like interpretive work, basically? Like, because a lot of what you're saying feels like it's like, okay, like what I gathered from that and was fascinated by was all of the room for making meaning by putting this next to this and how to use like different techniques to leave that space for interpretation open, or am I projecting what I think it means?
That's a huge part of it, but another part of it, and one of the real democratizing things about learning and about art and about poetry and about music that I found is that if you, like, anytime I was forced into a situation that I had to make meaning from something that I didn't know how to, I taught myself how to, or I trusted myself to make meaning from it. And that trust in your ability to interpret from something that isn't necessarily so didactic and sort of like professorial, you just start with what is it that you pay attention to? Like, what is loudest about that film, that music, that art, that, you know, what was the word that really stuck in your mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, what was the verb? What was the turn? What was the
sure.
Yeah, I keep thinking about The Lighthouse, that movie with Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe.
Robert Pattinson's the Twilight guy, right?
Twilight guy, yes. And there's a scene where in like Willem Dafoe's like sort of being buried alive, and you just see kind of, and it's in black and white, but you see the dirt like hitting up against his mouth. And I thought, how uncomfortable is that?
I would think about acne.
Yes, but the thing is, like, your interpretation and my interpretation and what we read into that is different, but it's not wrong.
Yeah.
Once I started to understand that a reading is justifiable if it's yours.
Yeah.
So if I think the first thing is to sort of peel that skin off of it. There's no such thing as right or wrong. Start from there.
Yeah.
Everything gets so much more approachable. Mm-hmm.
And start with observation.
Observation, clocking what you notice, and don't worry if you don't understand it. Because it's not, because it's like, there's this idea that there's some kind of like
mystical,
genius.
Singular answer.
Yeah, that you can understand right off the bat. Yeah. And if you don't, you're wrong and you're dumb. That's how I felt for so long with like poetry and literature and all that kind of stuff. And it's
as
like,
a person.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, you know, give it time. You know, let those associations settle.
Yeah.
And read it over or watch it again, because you'll catch something else. Once you've clocked those first observations, once you've read those first words, then the other ones, the conjoining ones, the connective ones, kind of can seep into that.
Yeah.
And then you start to see a story.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's impossible not to. And that's what makes art so fun. Because if we all had the same interpretation of everything, how boring would that be?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I hear people all the time say, don't put that in poems. Don't put tweets in poems. Don't put pop culture in poems. Don't put, you know, the word soul or the word love or whatever. And the thing is, right. Don't put a dream in it, you know?
Oh, God forbid. Unless, of course, you're going to write dream sonnets as, like, an old white dude from the 60s.
Right. But when I hear people say, don't do that, what I actually hear is, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, good, don't do it, because that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And we should be writing different work, because if we were all writing the same thing, how boring would that be?
Yeah. And I would add on to that if you're going to draw out all the different interpretations, the only truth to that matters is keeping it rooted in what you're really observing, as opposed to projecting your truth onto it.
Because
the other thing I see happen is that once people sometimes open up to the possibility of there not being a right or wrong interpretation of a poem, they'll project everything they're experiencing onto it without saying, but is that in the poem at all, right? Like, are you gathering up stars because you saw stars the other night and then there's no stars in the poem? Or is it both? Like, is it that you saw stars last night, there's no stars in the poem, and somewhere in between is where your meaning is making the poem happen for you.
Yeah. Right. And I think that's the benefit of multiple readings.
Yeah, exactly.
And deep readings. Yeah. And allowing, like, the first time I read anything, it's just a skim.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, it's like the
top
of the pool.
That's what I tell my students. When I'm telling them to read, sorry students if your name is familiar with time. Yep. But I always say, like, when you get your book of poems, take a week and just skim through it. Like, literally just read through it, doing nothing except absorbing what you absorb. Like, put an asterisk next to things that, like, hit you, things you might want to come back to, but just skim through. And then go back to the things that you asterisked and starred. And then start taking notes on what about it is, like, exciting you, or, like, stirring you, or making you angry. But, like, I actually fully believe in the power of poetry being a skimmable genre.
Yes. And that, like, the skim doesn't mean it stays.
Yeah.
But that it allows for it, you can still, you know, change your reading or enliven your reading, or, you know, it's like the first two times all you see is a vase, but then the second time you see the bathtub and then the vase breaks and then you have a laceration on your ankle. Just, you know,
maybe.
Where's
this story coming from?
But I find that, like, once I surrender to that idea, I don't feel like stupid for not understanding things.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, there are other people who read faster or read deeper or you know, quote unquote better, which that's not the rubric, but that's fine. That we just read differently. And you know what? Like, I pick out things that they don't, and there is, again, no right or wrong. So.
Yeah. But I will say that, like, it's not that it's wrong, but my heart breaks a little bit, and I'm not saying that hyperbolically, because sometimes I'll have folks come up to me and they'll say, I spent 5 hours reading this poem and trying to get it, and I just don't. And it's not like they wanted to get to know it, it's that they thought they had to understand every word of it, so they didn't experience it. You know what I mean? It was like, I had to understand it or I'm dumb and I don't get poetry. So I spent hours poring over it and I still don't get it. Mm-hmm. And that's when it's like, oh my goodness, like that's not what poetry can do.
Right. Well, you know? That's also reading it with somebody else's expectation.
Exactly. Right. And then it's, yeah, anyway, we could go on and on about this because now we're about teaching. But will you, before I forget, will you read for us?
Yes. Me and Leo yakety yak yacked about writer's block and the starchy long stroke of quote unquote God on the meadow walk, and he didn't know I was fully head over banana peels. I mean, in keels. I mean, in straight up crappy love with him yet. And maybe I didn't either. Sand crabs poking their bodies and legs post-wave. Hindsight is good and plenty. I mean, 2020, clearly the worst American candy. And what is candy but a crush? Leo said it's tangled up in waves, in dreams, in therapy. That writer's block, or is it God, comes from being blocked up in other parts of the days of our lives, of our lives, of our lives. This is polysaccharide, affective deflection, rejection heavy that he'd forgotten what the feeling of a good idea is. But I'm standing right in front of you, I thought bubbled, but never troubled the air with my utterance. Instead, I said, this is the part where you ask me for my number, because I was committed to being my own damn romantic comedy that year. Our sublime times. This is the Don Julio margarita mix of our situationship. These are the Doppler blips that ripple, resurface when Leo surfaces among the Chelsea thicket. Optimal frustration from the Odysseus years. Golden fleece of intimacy for the first time in like what, 6 months? A year? 2 years? 7 years? Has it been 7 years? 1492. It was literally 69 million years DC. It was literally 69 billion years BC. Dear reader, white as a bell, you whisk me to a fever, like the ruby cinnamon. Hey, let's make a vinaigrette. Did you know molasses emulsifies the olive oil and keeps the little fat molecules from stumbling into each other, thus allowing the oil and vinegar to mix? A sauce is broken when the oil separates like a heart. Sometimes this is inevitable, no matter how hard you shake the mason jar.
Nice.
Thank you.
Thank you for reading that.
I would say my final book.
Oh.
I think poetry might be done for me in terms of writing it.
As you switch into screenwriting,
you know,
and other things.
I started.
Can we talk about that actually?
Well, yeah, I mean, I started this project of books, this tetralogy, we're calling it, because it's, you know, four books, with a story in mind, a rough story. Like, I didn't know what it was going to say necessarily, but I knew I wanted it to be seasonal. I knew there were going to be four books.
Yeah.
I knew that they were going to largely follow the seasons, the first one, IRL, being a summer poem, second one, Nature Poem, being a fall poem, Junk is a winter poem, Feed is a spring poem, and I didn't know where it was going to go, but I did have that architecture in mind. And after I finished Feed, when I finished the other ones, and I finished Iron Nature from John, I wasn't necessarily that I was antsy, but I knew there was more work to be done.
Yeah.
And so I kind of was restless. I had like a restless writing
at the end of Feed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, at the end of the other ones.
When Feed was done, I don't.
I'm just like, in terms of poetry and in terms of this story and in terms of this tetralogy and in terms of this character, I think I said what I had to say. And when people ask me, like, when do you know you're done? It's like when you're in a crush, when you're crushing on somebody.
Yeah.
They've always got that halo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And everything you
and
do.
And then you know it's not there.
You know, it's like everything you do is subject to them, is because of them, is related to them in some way. And then when the crush is gone,
you're like, oh,
I can't even imagine it occupying my mind anymore.
Well.
And that's how I feel about this anyway.
Yeah.
If that means for the future, if I won't be continuing to write poems, but I haven't had the impulse, and it's been a year and a half, and I'm not used to having that lag time in between books or thinking, you know, in terms of a poetry thing, but I've been writing restlessly. It's just in a completely different genre or medium or whatever we're calling it these days.
Mm-hmm. I love that you're saying that, because I feel like there's this myth that poets are always poets as like a singular identity, and that they're always thinking of poems and wanting to write poems. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's true for everyone.
Right. Yeah. I think that's, again, getting to some kind of essentialism that I bristle at in general. Like the definitive, like, well, we do this like that. And it's like, I don't really believe.
We write every day, every morning, certain number of words, like, yeah.
I feel like anything I'd say, everyone's already said to you or about you with your poems because of, like, the polyvocalness, all of the references to pop culture, the, like, willingness to create your own language where you need to draw out the connections. But actually, my favorite thing is more, like, the rapid fire of metaphors, if that makes sense, mixed in with, like, realness. Like, it's not metaphor.
Right, and then
we'll stay stuck there. It's, like, metaphor and realness, metaphor and realness, metaphor and realness.
Yeah, and it's
one of my favorite things to teach because of that, actually. So
I mean, everything is basically a butthole, so why are we pretending like anything's high art to begin with? But I just, I mean, like, as a port for fecal matter.
Or blood.
Right, I just, yeah. I'm just like, I don't think of anything as being sacred or profane, and I think all of it is subject to, or allowed subject matter of a poem.
Yeah.
I don't think anything is like, I don't think anything is forbidden, and I don't think anything is too sacred to put in a work.
Can you connect or give an example for folks outside of poetry world of anything you've talked about today, actually? Because we've actually ended up covering a lot of ground, which I love. But just something...
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I like to talk... like I said, I'm perpetually on tour, and a lot of the questions that I get are about production. Because I wrote 4 books in 4 years, and
Wait,
also
really?
Wrote like a
so like a how do you make all this stuff?
Yes.
Question?
Yeah, yeah. Like how do you keep writing things? And I guess I wanted to tie it into the excerpt that I read and sort of the stuff that we've been talking about, as in like no division between sort of quote unquote high and low culture.
Yeah.
And that is like the project of my life has been to turn writing into a utility, and this is in all forms of writing.
Yeah,
this isn't just in poetry or screenwriting or whatever. What I mean is that, like, if I have 2 hours potentially to work, that I can work for those 2 hours. That I don't sit there and wait to be inspired or endlessly twiddle my thumbs and, like, check my browser and, like, just procrastinate the whole time.
So you're not like, until I write something profound, I'm not gonna write. You're like, no, I'm just gonna write.
Yes.
And, like, I'll find a use for it.
And trying as much as I can to extract the idea of intimidation from what it is that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And to try and not, and try and write without expectation of goodness, of funny, of deep, of profound, of, like, poetry, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
And,
which is
and,
also, like, taking your ego out of it.
Yeah. And to just sit there and start. And I try to not come into any kind of pressure of it being good because...
Yeah.
I would be too intimidated to write ever.
Yeah.
And to clearly and distinctly have moments of writer where I don't let in editor.
Okay.
You know, so that like the only
do you let that let editor in later all the time, or do you sometimes also never let the editor back in? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean I have to.
Mm-hmm.
But if only to double check my work. To a certain extent, if only to read over it in a different, and sometimes that means 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
Sometimes that means a month later. Sometimes it like where the I guess egotistical part of my brain that would take umbrage at somebody's reading of my work.
Uh-huh.
If I can tamp that down a little bit and like have the editor come in and just be like, no, that's good. Okay, no, you're good.
Yeah, you're good.
And so to have a dailiness, a quality of writing that the old where it's like the only idea or the only constraint is that I have to keep going. That's it. Like I can't stop and my hand has to keep working. Or I'm dictating if I'm not like near a writing instrument or whatever, if I can dictate into my phone and transcribe that later.
Which is sometimes easier.
Yeah, and because sometimes my brain moves faster than my hand does or these things do. And to think of writing as not being something divine.
Yeah.
And as not being something even special.
Yeah.
But because like when
it's
you think
not.
About it, you're writing all the time. You're writing text messages, you're writing emails, you're writing tweets and Instagram captions, and oftentimes if it's to a friend that has a direct address to it and it has a kind of clarity to it.
Yeah.
And so in general I would say like go through text messages and emails.
Yeah.
And just search for direct statements. Like, you know, Stan smelled like pickles. You know, something that's just like clear, and just extract that and put that in a thing, in a document, and then just like, once you're looking for a direct, because I oftentimes find that the accumulation, for Jump, for example, I was accumulating a lot of material for that book before I ever knew what form it was supposed to take. And so for a long time there, it was, it was stunted because it didn't have a direct address. And then I had this residency at the Ace Hotel where I had to write a letter. where I had to write a letter.
I would like that residency.
And I had to write a letter that would then, I got to stay at the hotel for one night for free, and I had like, I got to charge a meal to it. But I had to write a letter that a month later would be distributed to all the rooms.
Oh.
And, but the, and you just had to start it, Dear Reader. And so, that was, oh, sorry, I said Jump, but what I meant was Feed, the fourth book, that, like, once I had that Dear Reader in there, and I, it was epistolary, it was, like, in the form of a letter, it had an addressee, and then the rest of it kind of flowed through that fine point.
Yep, but to backtrack for a second, to make sure I'm understanding you right, and to paraphrase what I think you're saying, is it's not so much that you try to write every day, it's that you are writing every day, and you think about how you can pull every type of writing you're doing and use it.
Yeah.
So like your text messages, your Instagram, if you use, I don't know if you use Instagram that much actually, but like tweets, like whatever, and how to like reutilize it.
Yeah.
So that no writing is not seen as something you can pull from or as viable material.
Especially because, you know, now that I'm transitioning into screenwriting, I'm writing a lot of dialogue, and sometimes I just lift that from text messages.
Yeah.
I'm writing a pilot with my best friend, and we run lines on text. If the character were to say this, what would that person say? Like, well, they could say blah, 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 or they could say blah, 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 or they could say blah, 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 blah. But because it is in the form of a text message, I don't, I'm not intimidated. And I'm not like, we are writing a proper screenplay, you know? So it allows for some play.
Does it make
you know?
It easier for you to grab like lines you hear then too? Because something I do to my students, and I say to them, so I'm not sure you all love it, is like when they have an exercise to write, and they all do, depending on the class, it doesn't depend on the class, I'll put a song on and I'll be like, anytime you stop writing, you have to write the lyrics you're hearing until you start writing again. Just to keep yourself from thinking.
Yeah.
And like, I think that like, my selfish part of me is like, I also love watching the acknowledgement and overt, I'm taking something I heard and integrating it with my words in order to stop thinking that I'm like the sole speaker author. Like you can go back and be like, credit, obviously, credits are important, like you don't just steal. And you can go back and cut out some of those things, but like the kind of like, anything I'm writing can be usable, and the point is just kind of keep going and then grab what I need out of it.
For sure, and I also think that what that does is make you, make one, perhaps, responsible for their interpretation, because it's like, if you're writing down the lyrics, and this is what I like about writing just after I've read something, is that there might be something in that you're in conversation with in your mind already.
Yeah,
and you're just like, oh, what that makes me think of is like, and then you're writing
again. Yeah, exactly. It's like my pet assignment. I do it to myself too, don't worry, all the time. Or do it like as footnotes. So as footnotes, you have to just write lyrics every time you stop writing.
Yeah, I do that with reading. Well, I read until I find something that I'm either arguing with or agreeing with or something.
Yeah.
And just like, it's always going to... Yes, and like that will ping into a thought that I had already been thinking about, perhaps, or that I was already kind of obsessed with, or already in conversation with, at least in my mind, and that allows for it to come out.
Perfect. That's actually a perfect wrap-up point, I think, too. So we'll do our wrap-up, and then we'll do our intro, which you have all now already seen. And then I'll drive you to Airbnb to check in.
Sweet.
I have a nice car, so.
Nice.
I love it. Okay. I need to back up. I'm really bad at exit things, so wish me luck here.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for chatting about like so many different topics and being genuine.
Well, I mean, you've just basically gotten to scree into literally my mind because I just went with like the impulse.
Which I was fortunate enough to connect with. I was like, oh yeah, okay, I get this. It's still real. We're good. Everyone else watching, I hope you felt the same thing. And self-promotion time. Remember to like, subscribe. You can find an archive actually now of all of the videos at thepoetryvlog.com, and we're now making archives based on topic 2,
So queer poets, which is basically everyone on the project, so we should get more specific, but there'll be like topic based and then there'll be based on season. So you can check that out there.
Yes.
We're on social media, on Twitter and Instagram. And this is now a project where students are doing a lot of the work behind the scenes. So if you contribute to the project, which is at anchor.fm/thepoetryvlog/support.
Yeah, keep that in your browser.
Exactly, $1 a month or more. It'll go towards materials and the students work on the project. So that's a way that they kind of get something for their labor on
support.
This.
Come on.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. I don't have to self-promote. Like, the money doesn't go to me. Like, it was funny.
Do everything she says.
Exactly. I am a teacher.
Come on.
Like, I have built-in authority despite my gender presentation. So, all right. On that note, I think that's everything important.
Sure.
Everything else is in the description below. Buy Tony's books. Buy all four.
Yes.
Read the whole series. Teebs is an awesome character.
Come on now.
Exactly.
A character.
Character. Not at all based on a real person.
No, that's craft.
It's just
that's
fictional.
Craft.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.